You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Victory Monday here on Locked On Vikings. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show wherever it is you find your favorite shows, and you can always find this show by asking your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And today we get to talk about a pretty uncompetitive win. The Vikings go into the Meadowlands. They beat the Giants 28-10. Always good to get a three-score victory. And another one of these wins that kind of felt like it was over about midway through the second quarter, just the way the game was going. And there's a bunch of interesting stuff that happened in this game that kind of speaks to the way that we previewed it, if you listened to all of that stuff, but I'll catch you up if you missed it. And of course, I guess the headline is that it was a bit of a salve for all the drama that went on during the week. Of course, since the last time that we talked, Stephon Diggs did a press conference and showed up to practice and all this. Last time I did a podcast, I hadn't seen that yet. So there's a lot of Diggs comments to go over, and we'll talk about that stuff as well. And I also want to talk a bunch about like the X's and O's and kind of the story of what happened here, but I think let's start with the Diggs stuff. So since last we spoke, Diggs showed up to practice on Thursday, practiced on Friday. He did a media appearance that was very odd. He was like hiding in a hoodie and he was kind of sniffling. He blamed his absences on a cold, which obviously that doesn't count as an excuse. So he was fined a very steep $200,000. And he made some comments to the media about what the root of his frustrations. He denied that he was asking for a trade. Those rumors were kind of going around. Obviously, I put updates to all this in the show notes of the last show, so if you did listen to it after all the Diggs stuff, hopefully you caught up on all that stuff. But essentially, his point was that, hey, you know, I'm doing my job. It felt like, you know, the guy in the group project that does all the work and they still get an F because somebody else messed up, and of course he'd be frustrated. But he's basically saying, I'm doing my job, I'm getting open, and either throw to me or find a way to move the ball. I think the source of his frustration was offensive futility, not necessarily him not getting the ball enough, a la, you know, the old Randy Moss controversies or Terrell Owen controversies. This seemed a little different. This seemed like it was, you know, he's upset that the offense is bad, and that frustration led to him staying home for practice. So fast forward to this game at the Meadowlands, and he catches, I think he caught the very first pass, and I feel like that whole thing was kind of this big like sigh of relief, like, okay, he's here, he's playing, he's part of the offense, it's over, he got his bad fine, and this is all going to be put behind them, and they're going to go play a football game. Okay, what's going on in this football game? Diggs ends up with like three catches for 40 some, a fairly modest day. But Adam Thielen, of course, went off. Dalvin Cook got 200 yards from scrimmage, and the offense almost put up 500 on the Giants, which is something that this offense does not do very often. So after the game, there was a big media scrum around him in the locker room again, and he basically expressed, like, yeah, we killed it. And somebody actually asked him, like, hey, you know, you only got three catches. Are you okay with that? And his answer was, yeah, we got a lot of horses, which is a way of saying, like, well, there's a lot of good players, and they got the good ones today. Mine will come. That's fine. But the point was, he was happy that the offense really excelled. And I think that kind of drives the point home that he was upset about the offense not moving. And I think if you have another game, like the Chicago game, where the offense doesn't move the ball at all or all kinds of things go wrong, then maybe that drama could flare up again. But this is a pretty good salve to kind of put that stuff away and say, all right, yeah, had a bad fine, had a little bit of an episode there. We went on the road and we won anyways. That's great. Bring on Philly. There was also a question that said, hey, you know, do you want out of Minnesota? And he said, no, I like being in Minnesota. And then he kind of winked at that reporter, which is something he does all the time. He's a bit of a Casanova, for lack of a less appropriate word. But I'm already seeing people kind of read into that all the time, which I think is funny. I just think that it's reading a little bit too much into a situation you want to happen. But what I really want to highlight, and I think here's the story of this game, at least on the offensive side of the ball, which I think is the most interesting. Of course, the defense held a rookie quarterback to 10 points. I think it's weird that that's our expectation, but they met it this time, which is awesome. I mean, that's an unreasonably high expectation, but way to go. But I think this game was lost for the Giants in their film room. They watched, you know, the games where the defense stopped the Vikings, right? The Packers, the Bears, those games where they held the Vikings under 20. And what they saw was loaded boxes and pay attention to the rollouts, right? That's basically what the offense for the Vikings has been, is a bunch of running and a bunch of play action, that Kubiak thing. So that's the Giants actually did a reasonable job of pulling those tricks off. And I think what's encouraging about this game is that the Vikings had another layer to counter those things. So the Giants came out with super stacked boxes, right? I don't think they let a minus box happen or a plus box for the offense happen where there are fewer defenders in the box than the Vikings have blockers for the play. I don't think the Giants allowed that once all game. Could totally be wrong about this. I think all the good runs came against neutral boxes. I'll continue the explosive run plays thread on Twitter. If you're keeping up with that, I'll add, you know, I'll tack on all of these, which is going to be a lot of work, which is a good problem to have. But I do think that the Giants made like a concerted effort to keep the box stacked. And so the counter to that is rollouts, right? Play action one side, have Kirk run the other way. And it worked a whole bunch of times this game where you saw him just stand there forever and let things develop. And that led to a bunch of big plays. So they go in halftime and they say, okay, they're using those rollouts. We saw what Green Bay did for those rollouts. You know, send a defensive end upfield right away to go at the quarterback, whether or not it's a run, and just allow the run to kind of do what it does, but you're taking away the rollouts, right? It's this like huge commitment to take out the rollouts. They're killing us with this. We need to stop it at any cost. And so that's when you got some of those bigger second half runs, especially a couple of Alexander Mattison runs, and boy, that kid looks good. But essentially what it does is it means that they, to stack the box with, you know, say they have seven defenders and the Vikings have six blockers, but one of those defenders is going to run at the quarterback right away. It basically turns your quarterback into a blocker himself, which like completely changes the math. And I think at that point, the Giants had kind of committed too hard to stopping the rollouts and stopping the run. Like, they didn't commit hard enough to one or the other, and both kind of continued to work. And a huge part of this is that the Giants were playing two backup linebackers, and their starters weren't good anyways. They were missing Lorenzo Carter, who I believe is their leader in pressure generation. The offensive line only gave up a pressure on a quarter of the plays, which is a really, really good rate, best of the season by a long shot. There were still a couple of losses by Elflein and Bradbury that the broadcast kind of highlighted, but I think overall the line deserves a lot of praise for the way that they played in the Meadowlands. Now, I want to highlight a few more like individual moments and players and performances and stuff in a little bit, but first I want to talk to you about the sponsor for today's episode. A lot of men have their own little secret for how to last longer, like counting backwards in their head or thinking about baseball stats. But what if you didn't have to work nearly as hard? The folks at Roman, a men's health company, have figured out the secret to longer lasting sex. Roman swipes are a clinically proven way to last way longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast acting, but they don't require a prescription, so that's one less headache to deal with. Roman can ship swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for wherever you need it. It's super easy. Just take swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. And it won't transfer to your partner, so that's one less thing you have to worry about. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free two-day shipping at roman.com/lockedonNFL. That's roman.com/lockedonNFL for $10 off and free two-day shipping. Go to roman.com/lockedonNFL. So I want to talk a little bit about I just kind of want to characterize the absolute success of this game, because 28 points doesn't seem like you just gashed someone, but they almost put up 500 yards. So what's the disconnect here, right? Well, they did fail a couple times in the red zone. We'll talk about that in a sec. But here's a couple of stats that I think better illustrate just the absolute domination on both ends of the offensive side of the ball, both the run and the pass. The pass was better than the run, I thought, which is cool to say because the run was pretty good. It took them a little bit to get going, and there were a few, I would call it like inconsistent, but still like lots of flashes and excellent plays, but the pass was super consistently good. So this is from a New York Daily News article that cites a stat that the Vikings converted a first down on 45% of their passing plays, which is completely and utterly obscene. And on just the first and second down passing plays, they converted 38% of those into first downs, which means they were doing a really good job of staying out of third down. And so third down conversions don't matter when you don't actually make it to third down anyways. Another one that I'm sure you all kind of clocked and noticed was that Britton Colquitt didn't come out to punt until the fourth quarter. He was, in fact, so bored that by the second quarter, he went over to the fans and started a skull chant with them. Like, he had nothing to do in the game except hold field goals. So pretty nice day for him. So on top of all the play action stuff working, and a lot of those throws went to Thielen just because he happened to be the guy that the flood concepts, you know, what the flood concepts that come off of play action are supposed to do, like the way that they're designed, is you have Kirk kind of rolling one way from, say, right to left, and you have all of the routes on the play also go from right to left. And what that does is it creates what's called a high-low stretch. So say there's, you know, a cornerback that that's supposed to take the shallow route, and a cornerback that's, or a safety that's supposed to take the deep route. That's the way that a lot of these defenses kind of construct like their coverage assignments. Well, if you have three people there, then those two guys basically have to pick, okay, which is the deep and which is the shallow. Usually they'll take the shallowest and the deepest guy, or they'll just kind of have to pick something. And you have suddenly the middle guy wide open. And that's how Adam Thielen got so wide open all the time. But there were also some mistakes. Like some of those plays were, you know, the cornerbacks, the young cornerbacks, or Janoris Jenkins and DeAndre Baker, and even the safeties, Jabril Preppers and the linebackers and stuff, just failing to cover better players. And so that's the advantage you get when you go into a game with Diggs and Thielen, is sometimes one of those guys can just kind of take over and gash the defense and move the offense down the field and score a bunch of points. And I thought that Kirk Cousins did a pretty good job in that game. I don't think he was mistake-free, but there is definitely more to praise than there is to criticize. A couple of really great throws down the field. The two touchdowns to Adam Thielen I thought were really nice throws. Some people were nitpicking the one that was on his back shoulder, which should have been over his shoulder and kind of dropped into the bucket. I think that those people are right, but I also think that whatever. He threw it at the correct shoulder away from the cornerback. It would have taken quite the play from DeAndre Baker to actually break that up, considering the ball placement, and he would have had to be in much better coverage than he was for that ball placement to actually work out, or to actually like work against the Vikings. So the throw was unequivocally good enough, and so I think it's worth praising more than it is worth criticizing, but sure, if you want to nitpick it, I think that's a valid one. The throw to Thielen in the back of the end zone for the second Thielen touchdown, though, I thought was just an absolute rope. And both catches by Thielen were absolutely excellent. I don't know, I feel like sometimes I undersell how good Thielen is in these games because he's just like meeting our already high expectations, but it is like consistently impressive. I also want to highlight Olabisi Johnson, who I think got like four catches on the day and ended up having a decent role as a wide receiver three. I don't think that what he was doing like was particularly explosive. I mean, he wasn't like, you know, dusting people who were in tight coverage or anything like that. He was just, you know, running the route that he was given, and the scheme happened to funnel the ball his way. But he caught the balls he was asked to catch. He got good enough yards after the catch. He was productive. And I think that that ultimately is a signal that more productive days could be coming for him, and that the whole wide receiver three thing that we've been dealing with throughout pretty much since, I don't know, April, has been, or since they didn't really draft one in May except for the two seventh round guys, seems like BC Johnson is kind of taking up that role, and somebody has, you know, kind of finally stepped up the way that nobody really did in training camp. And of course, no offensive review would be complete without talking about how, oh my god, Dalvin Cook is good. A lot of the blocking went really well. I can't wait to see the offensive line stats in this game, because I think they're going to be really, really favorable. Still had a couple of funny moments from Elfline and Bradbury. I bet Bradbury's grade might be lower than we expect because of a couple of penalties, maybe just one. But ultimately, the run blocking was excellent in this game versus lesser competition, but it still counts. And I thought the pass blocking was pretty nice, even though their job was made a lot easier by the rollouts. But that's how I want the Vikings to attack these games, you know, is to make the offensive line's job easier. They're not a great unit. Stop putting leverage on them. You know, put them in situations where it's easier for them to succeed, and maybe that puts a little bit more strain on like Diggs or Thielen, but you kind of want to give the hard jobs to your good players instead of giving them to your bad players. But in the case of just the run blocking, the line did a great job getting to their spots and sealing people off, and that allowed Dalvin Cook and to a lesser degree Abdullah and Madison to kind of go off. But most of Dalvin Cook's most explosive production came in the passing game, when he was either just a check down and he would make a guy miss and suddenly get way more yards than he really could, or a swing pass or screen passes down the line. That was another way that the Vikings kind of countered that, you know, send the defensive end way upfield. Well, that's exactly what you want a defensive end to do if you're going to run a screen that way. And so calling those screens, I feel like, was kind of a counter to that particular strategy, or just running more inside zone instead of outside zone. For outside zone, if you want to bounce the read outside, you kind of have to get past that defensive end. And if he's crashing way upfield, it kind of takes that away. So either it just changes the read, you have to bend it instead of banging it up in outside zone, or in inside zone where you're kind of going inside the defensive end in the first place, and the only reason you would go outside him is if that's sealed off and that's just the best place to go. But calling more inside zone in the second half was kind of another adjustment to counter what the Giants were going to do in, you know, copycatting what the Packers did and what the Bears did to a lesser degree. And so I just thought, like, really good, like, anticipatory play calling and scheme adjustments and stuff to just kind of stay ahead, one step ahead of the Giants, who did reasonable things in the face of what they had seen. But I just thought that the Vikings did a really good job of, like, anticipating what the Vikings or what the Giants were going to do and then saying, okay, what counters this? And then they started calling those plays and they managed to move the ball plenty throughout the second half as well. So what I want to end this up out with, for at least the offense, is, you know, why weren't there more points? I think that there were, like, 15 extra points left on the field, or 16, because I guess there was the safety too. Of course, there was the unfortunate Dalvin Cook fumble. That really stinks, and not much you can really say about that other than, you know, have better ball security. But he looked like he was about to lunge for the end zone, and it just kind of got caught in a bad situation, so I don't really blame him for that. But then there were the two red zone drives that stalled and ended up in field goals. So that's 4, 4, and 5, I guess 13 points, 4, 4, and 5 were kind of left on the field because of poor red zone play. So I kind of want to go back and, like, look at what was going on there. Obviously, there were some other issues they had. I thought they called reasonable plays on the goal line, but there were penalties and there were just kind of, like, failures in getting open. There was a really unfortunate sack that looked like it was a coverage sack. Again, want to kind of take another look before I, like, truly lock into that take, but it just seemed like execution in the red zone didn't quite come together. Here's the thing, though. Executing in the red zone is hard and also super unstable from game to game. A team who was good in the red zone one week isn't necessarily good in the red zone the next week. So that's something that could kind of flip back or fluctuate around and kind of bounce up and down. The production itself is the more sustainable thing. So against teams of the Giants caliber, which is a low caliber, they got a lot of harder teams on the schedule and a lot of this stuff won't carry over, but against teams of this caliber, or at least in the games, you know, the easier games on the schedule, I think this is about what you can expect. And that's really nice that I think that the Vikings have done a good job this year of going out and kicking the crap out of teams that they should kick the crap out of. It doesn't alleviate some of the concerns that come out of the Bears game about what happens, you know, what happens when they actually stop the run. That concern is still very much valid, but you can't really answer that question against the team like the Giants. You can only go out and beat up who's in front of you, and I thought the offense did a great job of that. Now, we're going to talk about the defense for the rest of the show, but first, make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get your favorite live event. Enter promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. So let's talk about the defense. I didn't do any, like, charting through the game. I figured I'll just wait for that stuff to come out on Monday and talk about it on the Tuesday show, but I have a feeling the pressure numbers are going to be pretty out there. I think if you just, like, go a whole game, like, do yourself a favor and just go a whole game resolving to watch Everson Griffin or Danielle Hunter on every single play, because those guys are just making these poor tackles suffer. They are just posturizing these guys. And it is kind of fun to see Danielle Hunter, you know, beat up on former Viking Mike Remmers. I thought Remmers did just about as good as everybody's done against Danielle Hunter, which is to say not very good. And of course, Hunter wrapped up, I think, 2 sacks and a whole bunch of pressures, and Everson Griffin got in there a whole bunch. I mean, Daniel Jones ended up having to break the pocket a ton. And what the Vikings ended up doing was exactly what I think they set out to do. So the way that they handle these quarterbacks that don't push the ball downfield, like, there will be a much different game plan, I think, against Pat Mahomes or somebody like Phillip Rivers, who's not afraid to kind of, you know, let it fly a little more. But against, like, Daniel Jones or somebody that, you know, a quarterback that the team is protecting by making them kind of keep their depth of target down and do more, you know, slants and more kind of like quick ins or quick outs type things, what you're supposed to do is just, like, keep it all in front of you and make the tackle. We saw a whole bunch of those plays. I mean, Trey Waynes gave up a catch for -1. And I think that play actually really embodied. It was down near the goal line. It was a swing pass, I think, to Sterling Shepard or somebody, maybe it was Evan Engram. And it was just like a quick take the snap and toss it out. And Trey Waynes, who was playing like 8 yards off, just crashes down and makes the tackle for a loss of one. And that's exactly what you're supposed to do. There's also a lot of talk about like Trey Waynes playing too far off. And I do think that he messes up his alignment sometimes. So this isn't like a full bodied excuse, but I do also think that the alignment rules call for when there's two wide receivers on one side, like in a 2x2 or a 2x1, you know, one guy takes the deep route, one guy takes the shallow route, and it doesn't matter which is running which. This is really good against those kind of those same high-low concepts, those stretch concepts that are meant to stretch, you know, the cornerback while the slot corner helps with that. And it's kind of an answer to the to stuff like flood that I talked about earlier. And so Trey Waynes will take the deeper route, obviously, because he's super fast, and then you have Mike Hughes or whoever's in the slot take the shallower route. And that's why he's playing so far off. He's not giving a whole bunch of cushion to a guy on, you know, third and four. He is just wait, because, you know, most route concepts, even the ones that are run on a third and four, are going to have some sort of deeper route meant to clear someone, and Trey Waynes just ends up being that cleared out guy. Now, sometimes he does misread this, and there are some route concepts that can take advantage of that particular alignment, so I do think that there might need to be some adjustments there if this starts getting out of hand. But ultimately, the defensive performance was amazing. I think the best series was the one down on the goal line where the Giants got like seven plays down there because of a penalty that I thought was kind of ticky-tacky, but I digress. There was three and out on the goal line, and then a penalty, and then another three and out on the goal line. There were two sacks in there. It was really just like you could just feel the Giants doing everything they possibly could to get those like last three or four yards and pulling out every trick in the book that they had, and the Vikings just had an answer for everything. And that's kind of why the final score to this is 28-10, because even though the Giants did have a couple drives where they managed to move the ball a little bit based on some mistakes, there were too many penalties for my tastes. I'm sure that Mike Zimmer is going to talk about it in the presser here. I haven't seen it yet. I'm kind of recording like directly after the game, but I'm sure penalties is going to like be a thing. Even though I disagreed with a whole bunch of the penalties that like enabled those drives, there still were like a few big plays allowed. And I guess if we're going to nitpick, like, yeah, those are bad. But ultimately, the body of work is incredible. And keeping an offense, even the Giants, without Saquon Barkley and with a rookie quarterback, when you wouldn't expect to do very well against a good defense, did exactly how you would expect them to do against a good defense. It's all kind of evidence that shows, like, yeah, this went about exactly how you would expect, considering your preconceived notions of the Vikings defense and the Giants offense. I think both of the main linebackers had incredible days. Obviously, Barr had that final interception that doesn't actually affect the game, but totally counts because it was a good play. And Eric Kendricks is continuing on his pace for a career day. I thought that he has had other games that are better this year, but that's not very useful information, because that doesn't mean that this game wasn't very good. It was very good. It's just that he wasn't, you know, the superstar of the game like he's been in other weeks, but still very good and definitely still on that career year pace. I really liked what I saw out of Mike Hughes. Hughes had a couple of mistakes earlier in the game, and he really pulled it together with some excellent coverage down the stretch. And I think that that's kind of what we've been seeing from him, is a very inconsistent but very you know, flashy type cornerback, a couple of dropped interceptions. I actually think this game could have been a lot worse for the Giants offense if some of those interceptions got pulled in, something he maybe will do a little tip drill a couple times throughout the week here to work on that. But all these are like really big nitpicks. Ultimately, the scheme worked the way that it was designed. Everybody made their tackles and the Giants only scored 10. What's not to like? And just to kind of close the thing up here, the Vikings really attacked this game the way that I wanted them to, considering what the Giants had shown up to this point. They really showed themselves to be vulnerable in exactly the ways that the Vikings attacked them. You know, attack the linebackers with play-action rollouts. Attack the quarterback, you know, with blitzes and forcing short throws that aren't good enough to actually move the ball downfield and forcing a bunch of punts. I really think that the Vikings handled this game well. There was even good time management in the 2-minute drill at the end of the half to go get a Hail Mary attempt. It wasn't caught, but getting the attempt was like an impressive result in and of itself. So ultimately, they really attacked this game well. And I know the whole week is basically going to be filled with like, you know, oh, but it was only the Giants kind of thing. But I really don't think that there's a ton of validity to that. I do get that, like, this victory is a bit kind of diminished by the fact that the Giants aren't a very good team, and doing it to a very good team is just that much less impressive. But I think that a lot of the things the Vikings did are signals of something good, right? Like, using good time management, that's great. That's something they can probably do. You know, the idea that they adjusted to the Giants' halftime adjustments like the fact that they anticipated that and then had a good counter is awesome. And it made it so that, you know, the Vikings didn't necessarily have to just rely on out executing a lesser team. They also out schemed the lesser team, and out scheming the lesser team is a good thing. This win isn't going to define the season or anything, but it counts all the same when it's time to figure out who makes the playoffs. So I'll take the W and we move on to a home game against Philadelphia. But that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On Vikings. As always, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find this show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts like Spotify, Himalaya, what have you. Or if you're a commuter or you just don't want to be looking at your phone, you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I'll see you all tomorrow with more in-depth review of this glorious victory, and as always, Skol.